This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
On Pop Fiction Women, we explore what it means to be a complicated woman.
Tired of endless variations of leading men next to one-dimensional archetypes of women, or strong female leads written by men that were essentially guys in women's bodies.
We started this show to highlight the many female characters in entertainment worth exploring, as well as the women who dreamt them up.
And now we're adding those creators to our conversations, discussing their process and passion in bringing these women to life.
Welcome to Complicated Conversations.
On these episodes, there's no spoilers.
So come on, it's starting. Karen Slaughter is one of the world's most popular and acclaimed storytellers, published in 120 countries with over 35 million copies sold across the globe. Her 21 novels include the Grant County and Will Trent books, as well as the Edgar-nominated Cop Town and the instant New York Times bestselling standalone novels Pretty Girls, The Good Daughter, and Pieces of Her. Slaughter is the founder of the Save the Libraries Project, a nonprofit organization established to support libraries and library programming. She is a native of Georgia and lives in Atlanta. Welcome to Pop Fiction Women, Karen.
Thank you. Happy to be here. And I mean here in my home.
Yes. and not leaving.
Yes.
So your newest book, False Witness, is out now. Tell us a little, or tell our listeners a little bit about this book.
Well, it's about 500 pages. It has a really cool jacket of a woman running. And, you know, actually, everybody says, do you get input in the jackets? And normally, I just let them do what they want to do because I figure they know what's going to be, you know, I get the jacket 6 months ahead of time. But this particular book, and I'm sure women can relate, we're all looking at it. And I'm looking at this silhouette of this woman, and she's got a giant butt, and that is all I can see. And so literally my first note ever on a jacket was, can you make her butt smaller? So that tells you nothing about the book. I'm really bad at talking about my own work, but I guess basically it's about two sisters who endure horrific trauma in their early adulthood and the ramifications of that trauma 20 years on. And I said it during the pandemic. It's not about the pandemic, but the pandemic actually, from a plot perspective, solved a couple of problems for me. And one of which was I have a woman who has a teenage daughter and she's not living with her daughter. The daughter is living with her husband in the suburbs. And everyone would hate this woman and call her a bad mother for that. But right, because of COVID, you know, there's a complete justification for this kid to be living with the dad in the suburbs where it's safer. So that is the book. One sister's a lawyer, one sister is not. How's that?
That is good. That works. I'm going to start with the one sister, with Lee. I read an article in which you said, I really found my voice when I started writing crimes that happened to women from a woman's perspective. And on this podcast, we embrace stories with complicated women who have flaws and contradictions, but who we relate to nonetheless, the very women you write about in your novels. And in False Witness, we have Lee Collier, who has worked really hard to build what looks like a normal life. You know, she has the successful career, the teenage daughter, as you mentioned, in a private school, a pretty good relationship with her ex, they co-parent, but she does have this devastating past, this trauma that you mentioned. And we love women here on Pop Fiction Women with secrets. To us, that just adds a complexity to the character and a way to drive the plot. I mean, who doesn't love, you know, a good secret and a buried past? So tell us a little bit more about your development of Lee, how you found her voice, or any challenges you faced when writing her.
Well, you know, there's a couple of answers to that. And the first is, when I first started writing 20 years ago, it was me, Patsy Cornwell, Kathy Reichs, and Mo Hayter. And honestly, I probably would be more on the same genre level as Mo Hayter, because no one knew what to do with us, because we were women writing, frankly, about violence, going into the details, that sort of thing. It just wasn't done. And all of us, I mean, Mo was on a plane coming from London to New York when some guy wrote a review of her book saying it's too violent, trashing her. And when she landed in New York, her tour had been canceled. Wow. So she got, you know, a couple of a week in New York on the publisher. But I mean, so it was very controversial for women to write about violence against women. I mean, why would we be interested in that?
Who better to write about
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So I was constantly asked about that. And I just said, you know, you need a woman's perspective, because the reason I wrote my first novel the way I did was because I wasn't hearing a woman's voice about these crimes. And not to say that guys were bad about writing about it, but they had this fantasy that, you know, a woman was either broken or needed saving. And like the way that it was resolved was she had sex with the hero and he made everything better. I mean, which is kind of bullshit. So I wanted to write about that. And Lee is an extension of that. You know, she is someone who experienced trauma. She's an adult now. Her life is really framed by that earlier trauma. And it's definitely a secret she keeps to protect herself and her family. But she is doing what a lot of women do in response to trauma. You know, men get trauma, they go out and they beat people up. And, you know, their anger is outwardly focused for the most part. Women, their anger is internally focused. And so she is controlling every part of her life, down to who she is when she's with her daughter, who she is when she's with her husband, who she is when she's with her fuck buddy, who she is at work. They're all different facets of her personality. And I say she's like a cat because, you know, cats have all kinds of aliases. I don't even remember my cat's original name because he's got like 16 other ones, depending on what he's doing. So Lee is someone who has really responded to trauma in a very controlling way, you know, because trauma, you're completely out of control. And so, you know, she's top of her class.
Especially at an age like that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So she's top of her class. She's the best at her law firm. You know, she's just driven to do what she feels like is the right thing.
Boy, all right. I'm not going to take everything you just said personally. I'm just going to say amazing. Yeah, I think she will resonate with a lot of people. Something else that really resonates with me about Lee is her being the oldest child and how that affects her personality. So as you mentioned, False Witness revolves around Lee and Callie. And like Lee, I'm the oldest, who has an overinflated sense of responsibility for the things that may or may not have happened to I happen to have a younger brother, but overinflated sense of responsibility as Lee does. Sibling relationships are really both very generic and rote, but also complex. And often they're overlooked in fiction for the parent-child relationship, right? So I wanted to know what interests you about sibling dynamics and why you choose to focus. It's not just in False Witness. This is something you've explored in other novels. Why this interests you?
Well, I have two older sisters, and my oldest sister is quite old because she was married at 17 and out of the house, and she's almost 8 years older than me. So we didn't have much of a relationship. But my middle sister's 3.5 years older than me, and we're very close. I will say both of them are extremely bossy. probably my storytelling is informed by being the youngest and also the weakest, because they would hold me down and spit in my eye and rub blisters on my skin and, you know, just the typical things that horribly violent things that girls do to each sisters do to each other. Like, I remember my sister took my trading card. I had some Charlie's Angels trading cards, and she took my Kate Jackson. And I told her if she didn't give it back, I was going to stand on the arm of the chair and jump on her leg and break it. And she didn't give it back, so I broke her leg. So, you know, just typical things like that. But I do like writing about those relationships. You know, your sister's the only person who can say to you, oh, your hair looks good. And what you hear is your hair has looked horrible every day until now. And it's like, Lord help the mister who says anything bad about my sister, but I can say as bad stuff as I want. So that is ripe for fiction, that relationship, I believe. And I love writing sister relationships. I love writing family relationships, mostly because as the youngest, I get the last word. Yes. As I say to my sister, write your own book if you don't like the younger sister being able to get these sick burns on your ass. So I just really like it. It's great. There's a lot of drama. There's a lot of history. There's just a very deep well for storytelling. And I mean, you get that with Callie and Lee, because one of the things about this trauma is, even though though they love each other, every time they see each other, they're reminded of it. And so they're only together when it's necessary, when one of them is in trouble. And they know that one is there for the other always, but just being, you know, social, sitting around and talking, that's really difficult for them because invariably they're reminded of that trauma.
I mean, I think that's true even when you don't share trauma to that magnitude, to the way Lee and Callie do. As soon as you're around your siblings, it's like you're a child again. Those roles are right back, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. My sister in my house will get me water. She'll get me a sandwich. And it's like my house. And she'll, yeah. I'm like, you're not going to cut the crust off that?
Yeah. Oh, God. But that infuriates me because I have an older brother and he comes in my house, right? And I'm like, no, this is my house. Like, why are you, you can't come in and like give me a noogie or piss me off in a way like you're still teasing me like I was 10. But it works every time because you just fall right back into it.
Yeah. Brothers are a little different. My mom is the youngest of three girls and she has just as many stories as you're telling with against each other and rubbing them, holding them down and rubbing something on them. I just saw a meme on Instagram that was like the woman is sitting there and she plays the oldest child and someone slides a sandwich across the table and oldest child's like, thank you, mom. The middle child's like, yes, I have my sandwich. And the youngest child's like, I said a red plate and I don't want crust and make it better. Otherwise, I'm not eating it.
Absolutely.
So sounds right. Yes.
So we probably should have warned you that you're talking to two lawyers. And in the book, as you said, Lee is a lawyer. She's a defense lawyer. She's been out on her own and is now working within the comforts of a prestigious law firm. I am a big law attorney on the defense side as well. And I'm married to a federal prosecutor. So this was all very much in my wheelhouse, the characters and the setting and false witness. I know you've written from the perspective of lawyers before. I don't think you're a lawyer or have a legal background from what I can tell. So tell me a little bit more about what interests you about lawyers, or if you've drawn on sort of any personal experiences, friends, family who are lawyers, for your character development, because you really nail it. So I'm just curious, or is it just research or?
So I did not even graduate college, but I am a really good mimic, I think. And I'm picking details, whether it's a police officer or a criminal, but I actually am like a Twitter Stanford lawyer. Because my friend Alifair Burke, we both donated a service. Like I let somebody appear in my book as a character and Alifair donated a law read to this fundraiser to help raise money for voting rights in Georgia. And so I saw that I knew I was going to do a book about a lawyer. Alifair has helped me before, but I feel really bad about that because she's such a great friend. And of course she would do it just to help me out. But she gets tapped by like Mike Connolly and everybody she knows is like, hey, lawyer. And you know, also she's a fantastic writer in her own right. So she understands, you guys probably realize this, you know, if a writer asks you a legal question, that they've got to make it interesting and they can't do a brief and footnotes and all of that. They just need to be able to capture the spirit of it. And Alifair gets that. And so what she'll say is, where do you need to get? And let's work back to the legal foundation, which is actually kind of like what a defense lawyer does anyway.
That's good advice.
So she donated this and I was like, I am going to pay her for her time. And I just bid at the auction and a lot of people wanted it, but I outbid everyone to get this legal read. And so I didn't feel as guilty sending her questions and sending her passages and things like spousal privilege just did not make any sense to me. And actually there was something in that got into the galley that was changed after the fact. And I felt so horrible because Stacey Abrams read the galley for a blurb and she's also a lawyer and in Georgia and also
and a writer,
the legislature. And, you know, and I was like, oh, please let me, Alifair told me how to correct this. Please don't ding me on it. But, you know, so Alifair really helped me with that. And figuring out how to incorporate it into the story and how it works. So, I mean, it's just down to me listening to her and then putting it into fiction, which I think it's important because, you know, if you are a lawyer or a doctor or a medical examiner or a cop or whatever, or a nurse, and you read a passage that doesn't ring true, it takes you out of the story. So I try to get it as correct as I can, but also keeping in mind it's fiction. So maybe if it's like, oh, that's not right, but I can see why you did that.
Yeah. You know?
So hopefully I got more right than wrong. If I didn't, it's Allifair's fault.
Yeah.
No, you did. You got a lot right there. And also with the character, because it's not just about being a lawyer, at least for Lee. It's about why she was drawn to law. Like you said, her trauma really forced her to be very controlling over her life. And there's nothing more safe and clear than the law, especially when you're arguing for one side of it, right? So you really nailed that. But the most common praise for your books is how complex your characters are, how they go so far beyond quirky. You don't just give them messy clothes and call it a day, or a vague chip on your shoulder. Your characters are unique and fully realized, flawed human beings, as we all are. And as a thriller writer, one could argue that your readers are really just looking for plot, but you really give them both. Why are you interested in going so deeply into character? Is this just something that fascinates you, or you think you're doing a disservice by focusing more on just the story events rather than the character itself? Because you go so deep.
Well, I think the wonderful thing about genre right now is there are all kinds of hybrids. And I've always written character-driven procedurals, character-driven legal stuff. You know, it's always been character-driven. And if you just want plot, I mean, Jim Patterson's fantastic for that. But if you want something deeper that might make you think, that's the kind of book that I really enjoy, because I want to humanize these stories. One of the reasons is really a personal thing, because when I was a little girl, every Sunday we would have Sunday lunch with my grandmother and my grandfather, and the family would get together. And, you know, occasionally my grandmother would have a split lip, or she would have a black eye, and we would tease her about being clumsy. Well, as I got older, I thought, wait, no one is this clumsy. And I realized my grandfather was just beating the hell out of her, breaking her bones. Just, he was a horrible, horrible human being. He was so bad, the Klan kicked him out. They're like, you don't take care of your, I know, who knew they had standards,
right.
So he was just horrible. But I am here to tell you, being silent only helped him. It did not help her in any way. And so I made the choice to write about these things in an unflinching way. And I realized very quickly that in order to write about them in a non-exploitative way, a non-titillating way, is to humanize these characters. So even if you don't like them, you understand them, where they're coming from. You get that they have lives and they're making choices, even if they're bad choices, for a reason. And I never want to get to the end of a book, and the reason someone did it is, well, they're just crazy. They're just a psycho. You know, there are underpinning reasons, and I'm not excusing this person by any stretch, but I'm explaining how it happens. And that's important to me, is because I'm writing about really horrific things that happen to women every single day, sometimes every minute of the day, sometimes every second, if you're talking about sexual harassment. And I want to make it as realistic as possible. But I do say, if that's not what you want, there are so many great books you can read that don't do that, you know, that kind of just fade to black. But if this is the sort of story that you love, like Gillian Flynn, or, you know, Kathy Reichs, or Lisa Gardner, Lisa Unger, all the Lisas, Allifair, that's the type of book that I am interested in reading. And it's what I want to write about.
We love that. And do you find yourself do you think you're just deeply empathetic? Is it a lot of research? Because they say the first book is really sort of autobiographical, or you can only draw from your own self or your own life experiences so much. You've written dozens of novels. So do you feel like you're just digging into that well, or you're doing a lot of research? Because you're getting it so right, and it's not stuff I can imagine that you're doing just research on. You know, it's not A to B to C. You're just getting a full picture of a person, and so consistent and so real.
Well, thank you. But I do see them as real people. That's how I write about them. In my head, they're real people. And I've always been a daydreamer. Maybe it's because I'm the youngest of three, and that was my escape. Like, we would go on a trip to Florida, because we're from Georgia, so that's what a trip meant, go to the redneck Riviera. And my sisters and I would get in slap fights, and invariably would be like, Dad, she's looking at me. Dad, she's breathing on me. She's thinking about me. Make her stop. So I would just kind of, because of course I was in the middle on the hump, squeezing everything so that I didn't touch anybody. And I would just like zone out and think of stories. Most of them were about my sisters being violently murdered or disappearing and no one cared. But for the most part, I would just think of stories. And I've always done that. And so even before I write, like False Witness, the idea for this book came to me a couple of years ago. One of the things that is really difficult for me to write about is the perspective of a mother, because I do not like children. I do not find them interesting. I don't know why they're so heavy. They're very sticky. You know, I could go on. And so I read a lot of mommy blogs. And the opening of False Witness with Lee came from a cartoon I saw that showed the different types of children you see at a school play. And I thought, oh God, it never even occurred to me that that is one of the most horrific things you have to do as a parent is go to these freaking school plays. And that was really the genesis of that opening for Lee, because I had a finite amount of time to tell you who she is in that capacity. And so that was like, okay, she's a lawyer. She's very clever. She's got an edge. You know, she stands up for herself. I mean, I'm saying this to two female lawyers. But I think they teach you in law school how to think around corners. And, you know, you don't want to get in an argument with a lawyer because you're not going to win. Alifair and I have never argued. So, you know, I had to convey all these things, and that was a perfect way to do it. So that was a couple of years ago. But then the pandemic hit and I decided to incorporate the pandemic. And that was even better because, you know, it's a crowd. It's something familiar for a lot of my readers is like trying not to kill yourself during one of those school plays. But then there's social distancing, there's hand sanitizers, there's masks, there's all of this stuff that's changed. No one rushing for cookies and punch during intermission, right? So that was just a way to show how different the world was in a very familiar setting.
I love that. Yeah. You also have the opening scene with Callie, we don't know it right away, but she's babysitting. And so you think, does she not like her kid? What's going on here? And then you're like, no, this is just a perspective on someone else's child, because you don't ever feel that way about someone else's child.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I've been told that if I had my own children, I mean, I haven't had any that I know of, that I would feel differently. But, you know, even my nieces and nephews, I'm like, call me when you're in college. But it was a lot of fun to write from that perspective, because that's the great thing about being an author is you get to put yourself in everybody else's shoes. It's not so great in real life, because when someone comes at me with something, I'm like, well, why do they think that way? What went into that? So I'm always trying to game out how they got to that point. So it's great if you're a writer, but it's really annoying if you live with me, because I'm like, well, hold on, maybe that delivery person who ran over our rose bush was just having a bad day and it's so hard because of the pandemic and maybe people aren't tipping. You know, it's like, no, he's an asshole. He killed our roses.
That's exactly what I was asking. That's that thought process is exactly what I was looking for. I do that too. And it's just, it's a lot. It's a lot.
It's the writer brain.
It's a good skill for a defense attorney, though.
I was just going to say, it's not so easy living with a lawyer either. So,
yeah. Well, you know, it's always interesting to me, because the law is never what you want it to be or you really think it is. It's certainly not fair. I mean, the government has a lot stacked against them. No offense to your husband there.
No.
But I mean, they start on first base in a lot of ways. And people don't realize that a lot of criminals, they're just stupid. They make a stupid mistake. And people say, well, he could have made good choices. Well, he didn't have a lot of good choices to make. You got to start from that. So I did, for my previous novel with a lawyer, The Good Daughter, I did talk to a lot of defense lawyers, a really famous defense lawyer here in Atlanta, actually. I have his number. I hope I never need it, because it means I'm in real trouble.
Right.
But he defends like these ball players who get accused of rape. And I was like, well, let me ask you this. What happens if you get some guy off and he rapes somebody? And he was like, well, then they didn't make their case. That's not my fault. I was like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
But then I talked to a woman and she said, you know what? I've had that happen and I felt horrible about it, but you can only fight the battle that's put in front of you. You can't fight future battles, and you have to think ensuring that you're keeping the other side honest has a real value.
Yes. Oh, I like
that. Yes. Yeah. It does. Well, we know you only have a limited time. We have already said we're lawyers. You've mentioned that your own lawyer character is a bit of a control freak. we completely relate to that. So the one way we sort of get out of our control freak need to believe everything's in our control is through astrology, which is a very strange thing. But for us, it's how we sort of connect with our woo-woo side. So we do ask, we got to believe that there's something bigger at play, right? The universe, the stars, who knows? But we always ask our authors, we can't let you leave without doing it. What's your sign and do you relate to it? But we've already internet stalked you and we know you're a Capricorn.
I too am a control freak.
Okay.
Okay.
So you feel it.
Yeah. Or doesn't everybody vacuum and mop their garage once a month?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I love things being neat. It just makes me feel better. I don't feel like I'm a jerk about it, but I really, really like neatness. But you know, when I was in high school, I wanted to be a lawyer and we had a moot court and the judge didn't know the rules and was kind of half-assed doing it. And he let in some evidence and we lost because of that. Oh. And I was like, fuck this. I'm not going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be an
English
all the time. Major and drop out my third year. Right. That was really
and
smart.
Write about lawyers. It's fine.
You yeah, it anyway. Exactly. Yeah, I find it much easier to write about lawyers because I never lose.
Yes.
But I'm really stubborn. I'm very business oriented.
Hardworking, obviously.
Yeah.
Capricorn.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have such respect for like J-Lo and Taylor Swift and Lady Gaga, you know, because they're artists who also understand their business.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's totally my jam. But I'm super, super control freak without being a lawyer. So okay. I feel you, ladies. Okay. So do I meet all the Capricorn criteria?
Yes.
Yes.
You missing anything?
Nothing.
No.
I would say we have one of the shittiest stones. I know I like the sign, but it's like garnet, really?
Yeah.
It's so ugly.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of those. I can't even remember what March is. I don't think I have a good one either. I think I have aquamarine, just some blue glass.
Diamond. I mean, you know whoever came up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whoever came up with it was clearly born in April.
April.
Jealous.
Yeah.
What else are you into right now? This is something we like to ask all of our authors to find out. What are you reading, watching TV?
Okay.
Movies?
I am watching on Netflix. I only watch this on the treadmill because it keeps me really engaged. For All Mankind, it's on Apple. It's an alternate history about the NASA space program where Russia puts the first person on the moon and it's a woman. And so NASA's like, oh, let's get some ladies in here. So women are integral to the space missions that NASA did. So it's really fascinating. Books I'm reading, Roar by Cecilia Ahern,
yes.
Because I love her. And there's a Clint Smith, How the Word is Passed. It's just about how monuments and towns and places all over the country have roots in slavery. Their names do. The words do, like Angola Prison. We use a lot of stuff from slavery times named after really horrible people, like the Russell Building in downtown Atlanta. Or, you know, we have a lot of Forest Drives here with two R's after Nathan Bedford Forrest, who started the Klan. We're also the birthplace of Martin Luther King Jr. So, hey, let's contemporize these things, or at least accept that this is what they're named after.
Right.
Because most people don't know.
I was going to say the awareness is not there. And
yeah. And it hurts nobody to know history, and it hurts a lot of people not to. So it's a fascinating book. I read a lot of nonfiction when I'm working on my own stuff. So this is one of the things I picked up.
Nice.
I like that. I wanted to ask one last thing about your social media, because I love your social media. I had been a fan of your books, but I came across your Instagram when you were dancing to every time you went number one in a country and you were doing these dances that just won me over. And you're so funny. You have this dry sense of humor that we just love. Also not obvious for a thriller writer. Why? What is your approach? And is that just like, this is a different side of me you're showing?
Well, I try to put a lot of humor in the books because I'm writing about really dark things and it can't be all darkness. But I just lost my damn mind. So this was 2019. I was having like a midlife crisis. My father had some health concerns, which he's never been in a hospital. He wasn't even born in one. And that really threw me. And within a month, I had bought a Porsche, which I hated.
You're like textbook.
A I started trying to get on a show called Holy Moly.
Oh my God, I read about this.
So I ended up getting on it, but my midlife crisis was over. And that's where the dancing happened too. You know, I was just like doing silly things. And I remember, so January of 2020, I got accepted to be on Holy Moly. It's competitive golf. So you do crazy things and then you have to putt, or putt-putt rather. And so late February, early March of 2020, I was in Los Angeles filming, and the hole I played, I had to be on top of a 30-foot tall bouncy mountain riding a mechanical gopher.
Oh. You can look this up, Corinne. There's a clip.
Oh, I will. I will.
And I got thrown from the gopher. And so that was my hallmark for the pandemic. Like the last time I wore long pants, I was thrown from a gopher.
On top of a 30-foot bouncy mountain.
Yeah. I bounced down a bouncy house and fell on my ass. So that was like my pandemic hallmark, because I got home and immediately everything shut down.
Yeah.
Everything. And if you watch The Last Cruise, I was looking at my, on HBO, I was looking at my photos from that time. And I actually took a picture of the Princess Cruise Line building, because it was right down the street from me when these people were trapped on this cruise ship, waiting to find out if they had COVID. So yeah, it was a very surreal time, but that's how I mark the beginning.
That's your
of the
touchstone.
Pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thrown from a gopher.
I went to Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, there you go.
Misery.
Yeah. Well, if you want to get a virus, we're yeah. place.
Exactly.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us. Please tell people where to find you on social media and look up her Instagram and your Twitter, apparently, education.
Yes. Well, so I'm on Facebook. I think it's just Karen Slaughter Author. Any variation of author Karen Slaughter. Weirdly, there's a lot of Karen Slaughters out there. They must be so annoyed with me.
No.
They're getting like, why are you dancing? They're like, what? Grandma, leave me alone. So Instagram, Twitter, all the stuff, except TikTok. I just can't do it.
No, neither.
It's so loud. No, I love watching TikTok videos, but I can't get on TikTok. I would have no more time left.
It's a bridge too far. Yeah. And you have to keep writing books for us.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. False Witness is out now. I was just going to say something else about your Instagram, but I forgot. Anyway.
Cats.
Thank
you. Lots of cats.
Yes.
And toddlers, sticky, whiny toddlers.
Yeah. Yes. Heavy. Like a sack of concrete.
Ugh. They are.
Well, thank you really so much. We love the book. Love talking with you. We really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
This has been Pop Fiction Women with Corinne and Kate.
If you enjoyed this show, please tell the complicated women in your life.
And the men who love them.
Yes, tell them to listen. And then to follow on Spotify or review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And of course, share on social media.
Tag us with your favorite books, TV shows, and movies starring complicated women on Facebook and Instagram at Pop Fiction Women, or on Twitter at pop_women.
For more coverage of the women you love, or to find out if you qualify as a complicated woman, go to popfictionwomen.com.
And keep it complicated.